Thank you very much. The luggage arrived. On March 5th of 1960, I tuned into my car radio and I heard a recording of the unmistakable, exceptional voice of Leonard Warren singing the prologue to Pagliacci. At the end of the recording, the announcer said, "That was the late Leonard Warren." I cried. Why did I cry? I wasn't particularly an opera fan at that time. But later on, I realized subconsciously that Leonard Warren was my vocal hero. The night before, Warren had died on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera in a performance of La Forza del Destino. He was only 48 years old and at the peak of his power. Let me see, I've got to get my... the audio tape. Oh, there he is.
Morir, tremenda cosa, s'intrepito, si prove, fei pur morrà. Uom singolar costui.
That aria, in case you didn't catch all the Italian, is a song about death. And the first two words are, morir, tremenda cosa, to die is a terrible thing. This presentation highlights my 15-year labor of love to perpetuate Warren's exceptional artistry in a project that led to the publication during April of Warren's biography, Leonard Warren, American Baritone, and the Leonard Warren commemorative CDs called Opera Arias and Concert Songs. I will conclude with some advice about undertaking such an ambitious project and an unusual vocal treat. I would like to say also that there is handout material which will be given to you at the end of the presentation, including an outline of this presentation. I also want to tell you that starting tomorrow morning, two copies of the biography and two copies of the commemorative CDs will be at auction. So fight it out. Let's start with a question most often asked. How did it all begin? In the mid-1980s, I was on the board of the Lyric Opera Center for American Artists, where my wife and I became acquainted with and mentored young aspiring opera singers. We made a commitment to these young artists that if they ever won the Metropolitan Opera auditions, we would go to New York and cheer them on at the winner's concert. This proved to be an expensive commitment because they won 3 years in a row. But anyway, to learn more about Leonard Warren, during our first trip to the Winners Concert in April of 1985, my wife and I arranged to meet with Vivian Warren, who is Leonard Warren's sister. In a delightful meeting with Vivian and Warren's brother-in-law, Roy Lifelin, we pointed out that although Warren was considered the greatest operatic baritone of his era, no book had been written about his life, and all his recordings were going out of print. We were concerned that his exceptional artistry would be inaccessible to future generations. So at the end of the evening, I volunteered to pursue what might be done to remedy the situation. Well, a few months later, I had to make a trip to Australia for a business trip, and I had many, many hours in the air to think about what might be done. And during the trip, I conceived a plan, you might call it a vision, to perpetuate Warren's artistry and to aid in the career development of young singers. Soon after my return from Australia, my wife and I, Muriel, met again with Vivian and Roy, and I outlined my proposal. Form the Leonard Warren Foundation, because this would allow donors to make tax deductible contributions, publish the Leonard Warren biography, publish a two-disc commemorative CD package of his most treasured opera arias and concert songs, and in addition to marketing them to the public, donate the book and the CDs to all music schools worldwide that have a solid voice program. After a long silence, Vivian said, "Let's go for it." And from that point on, I faced the daunting task of making it all happen. Before getting into the details of making it all happen, let's consider for the moment my qualifications in 1985 for undertaking such an ambitious project. First, Warren was my vocal hero. So far, so good. I was a CPA with no experience in the business of opera, book publishing, or producing records, and I had no contacts with anyone at the Metropolitan Opera, RCA Victor, or any other organization that had ties to Leonard Warren. In other words, I didn't have a clue, but undaunted, I plunged ahead. We formed the foundation the following year and began the task of assembling a board of directors and an advisory board. And eventually we put together a very distinguished advisory board that consisted of the general directors of the three top United States opera companies, New York, Chicago, and San Francisco. We had four prominent baritones, have to have baritones, Cheryl Mills, Louis Quillico, Vladimir Chernoff, and Thomas Hampson, and 10 leading artists who performed with Warren, and at last but not least, opera and baritone aficionado Tony Randall, who wound up writing a foreword to the Leonard Warren biography. Early on, I thought there were four easy steps to launch the Leonard Warren biography. You retain an author, you find a publisher, you prepare a list of recordings, you prepare a list of opera performances. Well, as this audience can especially appreciate, this was naive, to say the least. Nothing turned out to be easy, and each one of these steps took much, much longer than I had anticipated. And later on, I found out that step three is called a discography, and step four is called a chronology. I was certainly not well informed about who might be suitable author candidates, and after a somewhat haphazard period of searching, in May 1987, I signed an authoring agreement with our first author, I underline first. For a variety of reasons, including ill health, and after 9 years, the first author was unable to deliver an acceptable manuscript and we had to part ways. To say the least, this was a bitter and expensive disappointment. Discouraged, I made inquiries of other potential offers, but no strong candidate emerged. One night, I took particular notice in my music library of a book much thicker than the rest titled Verdi, a Biography by Mary Jane Phillips Motts. In a flash of inspiration, I wrote a letter to the publisher, to Miss Phillips Motts, saying that it occurred to me that the author of the acclaimed biography of Giuseppe Verdi would be the ideal candidate to author the biography of the greatest Verdi baritone this country has ever produced. After reading my letter, Mrs. Phillips Motts called me and said she agreed. So I flew to New York and signed her up. Mary Jane not only wrote a really carefully researched and superb biography, but she wrote it in less than 3 years, a real miracle. She was our perfect author. Really, how lucky can you get? Well, again, I was not well versed on how to go about finding the right publisher. Being out on the West Coast, I thought what we needed was a big New York-based major publisher, right? Wrong. All too quickly, I learned that bottom line considerations really precluded any major publisher from really publishing a book about an American opera singer. And I suppose if we'd been peddling Elvis Presley, they would have signed us up right on the spot, but case. Well, fortunately, William Moran, who's a well-known and respected member of this organization and an outstanding discographer, recommended Amadeus Press, which is a quality book publisher specializing in music, including biographies of composers, conductors, opera singers, and instrumentalists. And in April 1994, 7 years after retaining our first author, we signed a publishing contract with Amadeus Press. Fortunately, it turned out to be the right choice. Well, my initial impression was that a discography was merely a list of recordings. And as members of ARSC, you know this concept is seriously flawed. But in 1992, I started reviewing operatic discographies. Well, fortunately, I read Lawrence Tibbett, Singing Actor, which was published by Amadeus Press, and Tibbett's discographer was William Moran. I was inspired by Bill's format, which seemed to be a little easier to understand than others that I had seen. For example, he had captions at the head of each tabular column of information. I corresponded with Bill and eventually met with him at his home in La Cañada, California. He was most helpful, but he was troubled with my initial ideas of organization of the discography, and he really took strong exception when I told him I wasn't going to publish any pirate recordings in the discography. Well, Bill had a lot of clout, and eventually he beat me down on this issue. So the discography does indeed include unauthorized recordings. But on the other hand, with my minor variations, I stuck to my guns on the organization of the discography. It's included in the Warren biography, and it has seven sections and runs 111 pages, and examples are going to be in your handout material at the end of this presentation. In preparing the discography, what I thought would take 6 months to accomplish took 7 years, and many, many dedicated people helped me enormously. They're all acknowledged in the book, and they include 10 people with music-related organizations such as the Metropolitan Opera Guild, BMG Classics, etc., 14 people in six states from Tallulah, Louisiana to Bemidji, Minnesota, and in three other countries. And ARSC members who helped me included Bill Moran, David Hamilton, who is here today, Elwood McKee, who's not here today, and Emil Pinta. Several colleagues spent untold hours sharing their information and expertise and reviewing my somewhat primitive early drafts. They improved the quality of the discography immeasurably, and I owe them a great debt. According to the Annals of the Metropolitan Opera, Leonard Warren sang 607 performances at the Met, his artistic home, exclusive of galas and special concerts. Unfortunately, the Annals information is not easy to summarize. Since the Annals were prepared from a computer database, I requested the Metropolitan Opera Guild to provide me with a list of Warren performances by date and by opera. At first, they refused. Eventually, I became such a nuisance, they referred me to their software house. I gave them the Leonard Warren specifications, and in 1993, I received the Guild's first custom chronology. It listed all 607 of these performances, sorted by opera and by date. It is truly fantastic. Since then, for a fee, the Guild has produced these custom chronologies for many, many Met artists, and I don't even get a commission on any of this stuff. But at any rate, so far I had data on 607 performances, but I still had to track down 226 non-Met opera performances. Fortunately, Leonard's wife, Agatha, kept a pen and ink summary of his opera performances by opera. I just summarized these by location and started my research. And because Warren sang in Mexico and Russia and Italy and Puerto Rico and Cuba, this project took 5 years to complete. But all 833 performances are in the chronology, which is in the book, together with principal artists. And again, examples of that are included in the handout material. Again, I had help from many people, including several who did not speak English. My next major project was producing the Leonard Warren commemorative CDs. Amazing. Fortunately, Warren recorded exclusively with RCA Victor from 1939 to the end of his career in 1959, a 20-year span. With this in mind, my initial thought was to persuade RCA Victor to produce the Warren commemorative CDs in a collaborative arrangement with the foundation. The late Jack Pfeiffer and I worked out a plan to do this in late 1987, soon after the RCA Redzia was acquired by Bertelsmann, the German conglomerate. At this time, you recall, RCA became BMG Classics. However, in early 1994, BMG canceled these plans. Thus, I had to recognize that if there were going to be a Leonard Warren commemorative CD package, the foundation was going to have to do it. And I became a producer and plunged ahead on another new major project. In February 1995, I negotiated a licensing agreement with BMG that authorized the foundation to produce the Warren CDs with 40 selections. And since the foundation was not in the record business, I had to negotiate an agreement with VAI Distribution to distribute the Warren CDs. While BMG prepared the initial CD transfers of the 40 selections, there were 16 opera arias and 24 concert songs, I wasn't satisfied with the quality, and I eventually had them remastered by the team of Dan Hladek and our own Seth Winner here today. Incidentally, the CDs included 3 concert songs that are new commercial releases, have been in the vaults for 50 years, and a Wagnerian opera aria that was never released outside of Russia. Well, the next important step was to design the CD package. I wanted it to be viewed as a collector's item and spent hours reviewing packaging concepts at classical CD stores and in my own collection. Finally, the design emerged. There isn't time to cover the adventure of finding and working with a graphic designer, the suppliers for the CD packaging, and the suppliers for the CD booklet and the CD manufacturer. However, as you might expect, this turned out to be another major project. And I'm pleased to report that our CD package design is unique. Nothing anywhere is like it. The packaging was manufactured in Holland, and the 102-page CD booklet, including a mini bio of Warren, which I compiled, was manufactured in Sweden. So it's truly an international effort. And in a fortuitous development, our superb graphic designer turned out to be Leonard Warren's grandnephew, Edward Warren Haber. To provide greater sales impact, we implemented 2 important marketing concepts. First, Amadeus Press agreed to have the same picture of Warren in his role of Macbeth on the cover of the biography as we planned to use on the cover of the CD package. Since we planned the release of the CDs to coincide with the publication of the Warren biography 2 months ago, that now permitted us to have joint advertising, and we had joint advertising with both the book and the CD with the Macbeth picture on both covers in Opera News. It will be coming out soon in Fanfare, followed by ads in 2 UK publications. As you might expect, a project of this magnitude requires a major investment that can never be recovered in book royalties or CD proceeds. And not surprisingly, fundraising was another major project. In this connection, we prepared a brochure, which is included in your handout material, that summarized our goals. And it's interesting, foundations turned out to be a non-source of funding for us. We found out the hard way, as many of you probably know, that unless you have a member of their board who's running interference, forget it. It's too easy for them to say, you don't fall within our guidelines. In 1997, we established the Leonard Warren Foundation website, as you might expect, leonardwarren.org. And so far, we've had about 26,500 hits and a respectable quality of email from all over the world. And incidentally, an important interview with an Argentinian soprano who sang with Warren resulted from email I received from Buenos Aires. A young lady emailed me that her father knew all about Leonard Warren. So I emailed back and said I would really appreciate it if you could have him get in touch with me. So one day I came home, he said, Mr. Crawford? I said, yes. He says, my name is Horacio Molina, and I'm calling from Buenos Aires. He says, Leonard Warren was the greatest baritone of the century. And I said, well, Mr. Molina, you and I agree completely on that. He says, I know a soprano who lives here in Buenos Aires who sang with him. Her name is Delia Rigal. And I said, if you would please interview Miss Rigal and summarize it in English and send it to me, I would really appreciate it. I'd like to give it to the author in the hope that it might be worthy of publication. He said, oh my God, he says, I'm so busy. But he says, this is important, I'll do it. So he did it, and the interview turned out to be quite unusual. Miss Rigal tells the story that one time she was in a rehearsal with Leonard Warren for Pagliacci, but neither the tenor nor the tenor cover showed up. So Leonard grabbed the score, not only sang all the baritone parts, he sang every one of the tenor arias and hit every one right square in the center, including Vesta Lejuba, and I gather blew everybody away. So that is the advantage of email and having a website. There really isn't time to cover a lot of the details of this project, but there are two tasks that deserve mention. For the Warren biography, I had to obtain written permission for quotations from 78 newspapers, books, magazine publishers, radio stations, and individuals. And for the Warren CDs, as we heard from our legal expert here earlier, I had to apply for a mechanical license request for each of the 40 selections to determine whether sales royalties would have to be paid. Both of these tasks took many hours of research, letter writing, and follow-up. And you know, I nailed every one except one of these 78 permission requests. There was one major publisher who shall rename nameless, and I pleaded with these people. I sent for 6 months in a row, every month, a letter requesting this. And finally, the deadline passed, we went to press. 2 months later, I got a letter from them that said, we no longer have the copyright. So, such is life. Well, at the start of my presentation, I said that if you were to undertake a project of similar complexity and scope, I would give you some advice. My first advice is it's probably a good idea if you don't know up front all the challenges that you're going to face in a project of this scope. I'm sure if you did, you'd never get off dead center. I think you can be very confident that you can learn about areas that you're really not familiar with, get the best advice that you can muster, and make your own decisions, and never compromise on quality and completeness. Finally, if you have a clear vision and the tenacity to see it through, no matter how high the hurdles or how long it takes, you will be successful. And why is this so? Because along the way, you will find people who will share in your vision, who will provide their expertise and research, and will help you reach your goals. It worked for me, and it can work for you. Before I present you with this wonderful vocal treat, I'd like to read a couple of sentences written by Tony Randall in the foreword of the biography. How to describe his voice? If you know his records, you have a pretty good idea, but not completely. His voice in the opera house had a warmth that records never caught. It was huge and filled the house like black smoke. His piano and pianissimo singing had to be heard to be believed, for it filled the house like his full voice. It was an unusually round, fat voice. He was very musical, and he responded to the beauty of the music as if he were listening to it. He loved his voice. Its color was a gleaming mahogany. To many people, like me, susceptible people, opera is about one thing, voice. This cannot be explained. Beautiful voices make me cry, and Warren's was the most beautiful I have heard. In April 1954, Leonard Warren appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. Here is a videotape of that appearance with Warren singing the famous prologue to Pagliacci. This is the first time this performance has been shown in public since it was broadcast 46 years ago. And we thank Harvey Becker of Sofa Entertainment for allowing us to view this right now.
può, si può. Signore, signori, scusatemi se da sol mi presento. Io l'autore in parte vuol riprendere le vecchie usanze che a voi di nuovo inviami, ma non per dirvi come pria. Le lacrime che ne versiam son false, degli spasimi e dei nostri martir, non allarmatevi. No, no, l'autore ha cercato finge e fingervi uno squarcio di vita. Per massima sol che l'artista in uom e che per gli uomini scrivere deve.
Andiamo, incominciamo!